Charlene. Nice to see you.
Hi.
Are you well?
I'm very good.
Hello. We're not rushing you, are we?
No, not at all. Hello, darling. You well?
What a posh suite.
Oh, well, you know, I thought I'd make an effort. Hi, Larry.
How are you?
Very good. Well, do you want to come this way?
This is where you live?
This is where I live.
Not a bad house.
And I tied it up because I knew you were going to be here. Ed, you're next to me. Adam.
I'm next to Ed.
Oh, look at this. You're such good guest, fellas. You know how to mic yourselves.
And Ed brought a box of chocolates.
Where are they?
You forgot the chocolates. And Larry has perfume.
And where is the perfume, Larry?
On me.
On you. When Larry Mullins pinned an ad onto his school bulletin board in 1976, U2 was born. More than two decades and 17 albums later, they're still together. Today, I'm delighted to welcome U2. Hello, fellas. I'm just so flattered that you've come to see me, I must say.
It's such an honour to be here with you.
Thank you, darling. Now, when you guys first started over a quarter of a century ago, what is it about you guys in terms of, you know, having this enormous success, but also keeping it together as a band?
None of us were very good at sports.
Right.
So we couldn't run very far. I think it's probably that, you know, we came from Ireland. The community kind of kept us together. You know, that's where our friends are. They'd give us a bit of a hiding if they thought we were kind of getting above ourselves or we'd made a crap song or something.
He had a great technique when we were kids.
I invented mugging the other way.
The lads would come up and say, "We think you're crap." And I would just go, "Look, here's 50p. You wouldn't just go away, would you?
Go
have a cup of tea."
And do you think it was also important for you to do them proud?
Yeah, but I think also we love, you know, the music that we make together. And I think knowing that Edge is a great guitar player, Larry's a great drummer, Bonner's a great singer, and I can play bass, it brings the best out of everyone, you know?
Now, when you were on Larry King, Bonner, you said that you actually didn't like the name U2.
I didn't think about it for a long time, then when I did, I realised I didn't like it. And, I mean, a lot of great groups have crap names. And,
yes,
I mean, I didn't know the Beatles was a pun, for instance.
Oh, right.
I genuinely only figured that out recently, Beatles.
I like it.
And,
oh, yeah.
I always thought of it as the name of a spy plane. Mm. And then people would go, U2, that's good.
Speaking of names...
Yes.
Edge.
Yes.
Do you want to clarify why Bono decided to call you that?
Chin.
It's the chin.
The chisel-like.
I thought it was the head.
It's the whole package.
The whole package.
You know, in those days we were 16, 17, and everyone was getting nicknames, and generally you're actually trying to make fun of somebody in a nice way. Bono was supposed to be a kind of a slag, and the Edge, it was kind of similarly, you know, angular. I was felt... Particularly early on, it was like it broke down the first barrier between us and our audience because they knew us by our nicknames.
Yeah.
His mother is known as Mrs. The Edge.
Mrs. The Edge. Is she really?
And we'll answer
and
to
Papa it. And Papa The Edge, too?
Mrs. The Edge was our first roadie.
That sounds a bit ominous, that does.
She was our van driver.
Yeah. I don't believe that for a minute.
We used to have a roof rack. And we would manage to get an entire drum kit and all our amplifiers... And then we would carry our guitars and go on the bus. And then we would arrive to unload. We got our entire...
Oh, Mrs. The Edge.
Well, she was okay, because she had enough room just to see out to the tiny little window. So she'd be driving like this, and somebody would have to lift up the bass amp if she had to change gear.
Yeah, yeah.
It was one of those. Second gear, okay. It's Bono! It's Bono!
How does the motorcade compare to taking the 42 bus home from gigs in Men Temple in 1977?
It's quite a contrast, I have to say.
You still probably don't have any money in your pockets, do you?
No. I feel a lot more comfortable the fact that I'm not in charge of my own guitar.
I left it on the bus more than one occasion.
Now, is it true, Larry, that you are the policeman of the band?
Pete, look at those feet, June. I mean, are they not the feet of a policeman?
Of a policeman.
Hello.
Is that true?
In the past, I would have taken the position that these fellas, after giving them their first job, needed a little bit of a clip around the ear every now and then. So it is true that in the past I have, you know, dished out a few little things.
Parking tickets.
But now that I'm a little older, rather than punishing them for their problems, maybe try to help them through them.
Help them through. I understand.
Yeah. That's good. That's good and helpful.
Well, at least you know you don't have to spend the money. You've got him here to sort it all out.
Well, I'm not cheap.
You're not cheap. Well, I believe that. So how have the dynamics of the band changed since you all got together? How would you say?
We're not very good at dynamics.
No.
Well, Larry was
we tend to be...
And now he's not.
And now he's not.
He still hits things.
Yeah.
And he shouts at people. And me and Adam just try and keep it together.
Keep the peace. Adam, how do you guys keep things new when you've been around a group of men for so long?
It's about listening to the music that turns us on. Mm. I think, you know, you can't just listen to the music that you grew up with. You've got to keep being excited by what's coming along. You've got to feel that it's relevant to what you're trying to say and go with it. And that's what we do. You know, when you hear an Oasis song, you go,
that's good.
Yeah, that's good, but we can do better.
Oh, I like it.
So, The Edge, this morning we,
you said it was going to be 11 o'clock. It's half eight. What are you doing?
It's a day in the life of The Edge. You're a very busy guy. This is for you, kind of news station. I mentioned
I don't want to be on the news, man. You want to be on the news. I don't want to be... I don't need to be on the news.
Would you think about it?
No. We feed off each other's inspiration, so if Larry and Adam are playing with real conviction, I find I play better. If I'm playing well, then Bono's getting inspired. So unfortunately, that doesn't happen every time we start playing something. Often, we can go for a couple of days or a week, and it seems like nothing's happening that's of any interest. And then suddenly, for no apparent reason, you get into a jam that you know is just really amazing, and that's a very exciting thing. And that's what we live for as a band, is that moment where it all comes together and suddenly you've got a new song.
One is actually a good example of that, isn't it? You know, where in a recording studio with things not going terribly well,
we couldn't get anywhere with the song, so I went off into another room and came back with just some chords and said, okay, here, I've got two ideas. And I played the first idea and everyone went, that sounds like it could work. And then I played the second idea and they said, play that one into that one.
Yes.
So I was just on acoustic guitar and everyone went, ooh.
That worked.
So we just went into the room and Bono got on the mic. We all started playing along and suddenly within 10 minutes, like, the song had just happened.
Now, fellas, this question is for all of you. Do you ever still get insecure?
To be honest, every time we go into the studio, every time you sit down to try and write a song, there are times where it's really not happening. And, you know, if you go through a bad few weeks, it's like you can just start to really doubt whether you're ever going to write a song again. And also with the concerts, sometimes, you know, you might have a couple of bad shows. And certainly in the old days, when we had a bad show, it was bad. I mean, it was bad because we'd get so mad at ourselves. And I think it's why we're still doing what we do, is that we know the difference between our best work and other things. Getting to the good stuff is hard.
Sometimes it can be just a little bit too critical. My own insecurity and self-doubt is kind of what makes me get up in the morning.
Yes.
It's all about proving yourself.
To yourself.
And I'm not sure that it's terribly healthy, but it certainly gives you a kick in the ass.
The difference between being really crap and really great, they're very close together, and you don't always know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
I mean, for other people.
For other people. We've got a quick fire round for you. Who gets everyone motivated? Is that you, Larry?
Oh, Mr. Motivator.
Oh, Mr. Motivator. Do you remember Mr. Motivator?
Motivator.
Yeah. Who's the most precious about the music?
Larry.
Larry.
Larry, yeah.
Who's ever had a creative dry patch?
All three of them.
Okay, who's got the biggest ego?
Oh, gosh, now, who would that be? catch a singer by the toe.
Who gets wound up the easiest?
Wound up the easiest?
Shortest fuse. They're all looking at you, funnily
No, I just got a very long fuse, actually.
Oh, very long fuse.
About 15 years.
It'd be between me and Larry, I think.
All right. When was the last time you felt embarrassed as a band?
It was in London. We brought down a full orchestra to play in a couple of new tunes.
Yeah.
45-piece orchestra. No sensible person could afford one. And sometimes you only discover, when you're performing the song live, if it is one or not.
Yeah.
Well, this happened live in front of
45
classically trained musicians, and I felt embarrassed.
But doing the playback to George Martin, at the end of it, George, as we're leaving, he just leant over to me and said, tell me, are you finishing the songs before you do the string arrangements these days? I just went, yes, George, we are now.
And finally, before we go to the break, who always has the last say?
Whoever feels the strongest whatever that happens to be, which is often Bono.
Or whoever stays up the latest, which is often Edge.
Well, on that note, I'm having the last say. Time for us to take a quick break.
Okay.
We'll be back in a minute.
The last two albums, I think we've had 14 Grammys or something. And we often wonder, who's voting for us? We think it might be the country people.
Welcome back to our U2 special. I'm still joined by the fabulous fellas. So let's get down to the present day, your new album, which is at U2 18, the singles collection. It's more or less like another greatest hits. What made you decide to do it this way?
Before they go out of fashion.
They're never going to go out of fashion.
Yes, they are. The CD is disappearing. People are buying music very differently now. They're not buying collections of songs.
Right. We've
got a very new, young audience come on since the last two albums.
Yeah.
And we wanted to get the singles together, all on one CD, while CDs still existed. That's the honest answer.
Do you get nostalgic at all when you kind of hear the old songs?
Well, we're still playing them live, so the songs themselves are still very live for us. Because, we're
still trying to finish them.
Yeah. But those recordings, I remember, and I listen to them and I sometimes go, how the hell did I get that sound?
Yeah.
You actually don't remember directly how it came about.
Do you remember moments of where you were and...
Well, I will follow. It was like a month before we recorded our first album.
Mm.
And we were rehearsing in a really run-down, cold little Irish cottage. Bono had come in and said, I've got this song, it kind of goes like this. And every time I hear it, I remember that moment. I remember the cold.
We're going to move on to the third album, War. Now, this is the first time that we saw you guys get political. What did Sunday, Bloody Sunday mean then? And do you think it's even more relevant now?
You know, it's a song really against the paramilitary violence that was happening in Northern Ireland at the time. And of course, a lot has changed because thankfully now it's gone to a political approach as opposed to using terrorism as a weapon. Now we're looking into the future, and it's a much brighter future than it was then.
And do you think that is relevant now with what's going on?
I prefer the song now in a way. What's interesting is if you play that song in New York after 9/11, if you play that song in London after the 7/7, the song has a currency. People know what it's about, and the rat-a-tat-tat of that sort of drum tattoo, people know what that means. People are more valuable than ideas.
Yeah.
And we kind of all know that, and they, people just want somebody to say it.
So out of all the albums, I mean, a lot of people have said Joshua Tree is maybe your best. Which do you think is?
I think Acting Baby is probably a more complete album than the Joshua Tree, but I think the last album, How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb, as a complete collection of songs, is up there for me.
The last two albums, I think we've had 14 Grammys or something. And we often wonder, who's voting for us? We think it might be the country people.
Now, Bonner, we're going to move on to The Sweetest Thing. Now, is it true that you wrote The Sweetest Thing about your wife, Ali, because you forgot her birthday?
It was an apology song in the line of many apology songs that have been written, and I'm sure I've written more than a few. It was written very quickly. It was a B-side, and I gave her the song and said, well, look, that's for you. And in fact, just recently, she wrote to the rest of the band to say, did he give me that song, and are you following through on it? Because she wanted to give the money away to this Chernobyl Children's Project.
And we said, absolutely not. He never gave it to you. And we want our cash.
Now, there are only two new songs on the new album, and one of them is a collab with Green Day. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
I got a call from the charity I'm involved in called Music Rising, which is dedicated to replacing instruments for musicians in the Gulf Coast region and New Orleans post-Katrina, and they said the Superdome is reopening, and they'd love Music Rising to put some music together. So I started thinking about what might work, and this song came to me, which is one of my favorite songs from the punk era by a band called The Skids, who were contemporaries of ours when we first started out, called The Saints Are Coming. I thought maybe Green Day will be interested. So I called Billy Joe up, and I said, look, would you be interested? And I told him what the song was, and he, almost like within half an hour, he texted me back saying, I love the song, it's amazing, let's do it.
Back in 1988, one of U2's milestone collaborations was with blues legend B.B. King.
I had went to listen to the tape, and I was able to kind of get some of it together.
What'd you like to say?
I love the song. I think that the lyrics is really, real heavy lyrics. You're mighty young to write such heavy lyrics.
Out of all the collaborations that you guys have done, who would you say is the most memorable?
You know, Bob Dylan is somebody we got to know, and his work just gets better and better, and Johnny Cash, myself and Adam, went to see him in in Nashville. He took us around his zoo, and we were sitting at his table, and he was there with his family, and he said, shall we bow our heads?
Yes.
And we bowed our heads, and he just made this really beautiful, poetic grace. And we were all very moved, and then he just looked up, and he just turned to me and said, sure missed the drugs, though. And this is a man.
He did not.
Yeah, he did. Now, this is a man who nearly lost his life
to
drugs. He was trying to avoid piety. And there is a lesson for us all there.
There have been quite a few. I mean,
Frankie.
Yes. Well, Frankie Sinatra, I mean, Bono was pretty selfish with Frankie Sinatra. He wanted to keep them all to himself, and he did.
But beckoned. I was beckoned. What do you do when the chairman of the board calls you?
You say yes.
You should say, I'll bring my mates.
Yeah.
I didn't.
So is there anyone that you haven't collaborated with that you'd like to?
I think it would be very interesting to have met John Lennon, age 64, and asked him questions. Or Bob Marley would be so royal looking. He'd everything going to be all right.
Well, on that note, time for us to take a quick break.
Okay.
We'll be back in a minute.
It's hard not to be cynical. You know, I and we do, you know, put on our marching boots and occasionally can be obnoxious with it.
Welcome back to our U2 special. Now, one of the things with you guys is you're known for your activism. How do you deal with the cynics?
It's hard not to be cynical. You know, I and we do, you know, put on our marching boots and occasionally can be obnoxious with it. But we try to have some sense of humor about it and not be in your face. It's currency, isn't it, celebrity? It's mad and ridiculous, but it is currency, and you can spend it. Rock and roll has always been about liberation of some kind. And our music brought us to ask some very big questions about our faith and our faithlessness. We were very sure of one thing. It's got to be what you do with your beliefs, not what you say about them.
People are being cynical and they are seeing you as do-gooders and preacher men, which are some of the words that have been thrown around. Ed?
I think you got to be careful, you know. And there are so many good causes out there. We try and choose one or two things and really follow through and commit and really attempt to get it right and make a difference. And I think we sometimes get it wrong, you know. There's certain things we've been involved with, and later on we've gone, you know, maybe that wasn't the right thing. Yeah. But I have to say, the vast majority of the things that we do are things we believe in.
One of the criticisms that's leveled is that, why doesn't Bono just stick to writing lyrics? The truth is, we are very critical of what Bono does. I mean, in a positive criticism. And we will talk to him, and there are things that Bono's done, there are photographs that he had taken, there are things that have happened that we would feel uncomfortable with, and we can say that to him.
Hello? Somebody pick up the phone. I'd like to speak to Helmut Kohl, please. Hello, good evening. Do you speak English? I wish to speak to Queen Beatrix.
But there's, you know, that honesty there.
There's that honesty with it. We're not all doing the same thing. We're trying to get that balance.
Yeah.
But is it dangerous? Yes, it is. Would we prefer him to be doing something else? No.
Adam, do you think it interferes with the band at all?
No, I think, you know, we do have a mandate from our audience, and it's to not be boring. And it is to do the things...
I don't think anyone could call you guys boring.
I think it's to do the things that we and they feel passionate about.
This concert's about a return to normal life. That's what they want. And they don't want a patronage, they don't want to kiss their ass. They want us to kick their ass.
With charity work, you have to talk to everyone. How do you balance having dialogue with people who maybe you don't agree with?
I'll try to think about the people whose voice should be heard in those corridors of power.
Yeah.
I try to put flesh and bones on these statistics.
Yeah.
While I'm doing that, I can't be thinking about what they may have done in their past.
Mm.
There's occasions when I do want to take a bath afterwards or a shower, I will admit. But arrogance is the one that makes you feel the most unclean.
One of the things about rock and roll stars is that they're bigger than life, they're bigger than the audience, they're almost intimidating. Well, this whole set is like that, right?
That's right, yeah.
Isn't that off-putting? Doesn't that kill intimacy, though?
It does, yeah, absolutely, but you look great.
Bill Clinton?
Yeah, I'm doing a big job interview in America.
This is Bono here. How do you want us to call you? Do you want to call us, should we call you Governor or Bill?
No, you call me Bill.
All right, and you can call me Betty.
There's always a political aspect to art. There's a spiritual, sexual aspect as well. We want to keep it all in balance. We don't want to just become about activism, because the people will get tired of you.
And
you know,
it's the art that enables people to listen to you.
Yeah.
Your whole life, it's what you're working on, trying to describe what's going on. There's all kinds of things that affect you, and you know, our last album's called How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb.
Yes.
But it's the most personal, intimate album, because the thing that was going off in my life, which we were drawing from at this time, was, you know, my father had passed away, and that thing had sort of set off a chain reaction in me, and I had to tend to it. And people saying, but this is, the world's in flames, you're a political band, you've made your least political album. But you can't write songs to order. If they're any good, they sort of write you.
People always say this all the time, that fame and success and money doesn't change you. Has it changed you guys, honestly?
It better change you.
Mm.
Right?
Nothing stays the same. So of course we're different. We have been affected by it all. But it's a case of what you really choose to hold on to. You know, families are very important to us. Friends are very important to us. And
vintage cars are important to us.
But it is a freedom, isn't it?
That's true. It's a great privilege.
You get the chance to have different experiences.
And we've not lost sight of the fact that it is an incredible blessing.
To be in. Final question. What are you most proud of?
My humility. Nice one.
Adam?
I think that first Live Aid concert, you know, being a part of that was fantastic.
Yeah. Still being in a band that's not crap, yeah, and who any minute now might put out their best album.
Being able to get to this place with very little compromise to our own integrity.
Yeah. Well, fellas, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah!